For an entire week, Reddit, TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram were addicted to maritime law. There was a sudden increase in memes, explanation, and reaction videos on the subject of ships, canals, and the history behind it. And a lot of it had me thinking, what exactly happened for my For You page to be filled with people trying to explain to me how ships work? On March 23rd, 2021, at around 5:40 UTC, the Suez Canal was blocked in both directions by the ultra-large ship, the Ever Given. The Suez Canal was blocked off for approximately 6 days, and it held back 12% of the global economy and an estimated 10% of all the total seaborne oil trade that goes through this canal.
The world economy was in a brief state of worry, as everyone held back their breaths in fear of a prolonged freeze as hundreds and hundreds of ships piled up in the backlog hoping to pass through. Although on March 29th, the ship did resurface and trade could continue relatively normally, this event became a scary reminder of how crucial our seas act as trade routes and economic hubs. This is Justin and Bao Chao Le. We are currently first-year students at Claret McKenna College, and this is our podcast, Chinese Intervention Within the South China Sea. The goal of our podcast is to provide our audience with a comprehensive understanding of the South China Sea conflict, from taking case studies on countries such as Taiwan, Vietnam, and Philippines. We hope to paint a broader picture and further understand how this increasingly growing world power in China has cemented itself as a hegemonic leader within the region.
So how this podcast will function is each episode of the podcast will focus on a specific geographic region within the South China Sea through different case studies. We'll also be interviewing experts from across the world in order to gain a better understanding of certain policies and conflicts within the region.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that this region being dubbed the Maritime Superhighway is kind of this economic hub and gateway to all these geopolitical opportunities. It makes a lot of sense that we have these major actors like China, Philippines, and Vietnam all trying to stake claims within the region. We've seen this from examples of like China and Vietnam building islands, artificial islands within the region, to the United States trying to create partnerships with Taiwan and the Philippines in order to aggravate China and to also try to push back the hegemonic reaches that a lot of these countries are trying to push forward.
First, we would like to give a background on the South China Sea in order to create a foundation for what our podcast would center around. The first question we are looking to answer is, what exactly is the South China Sea? The South China Sea is a marginal sea within the Western Pacific Ocean. In the north, you have China and Taiwan, the Philippines in the east, Vietnam in the west, and Malaysia within the southeast. At least one third of the world's trade passes through these waters every single year, and there's speculation that there are billions, if not trillions, tons of oils and natural gases within these waters.
Yep. And I think that kind of cements what this current conflict that is occurring within the region. It's a conflict of power, a conflict of resources, and a conflict of general control over this region. As we talked about briefly, we see the major actors being the Philippines, Taiwan, Vietnam, Malaysia, and obviously China. And throughout this series, we'll be trying to explain, go into each geographical region of the north, the east, the west, and the south to further dive deeper into how we can contextualize these actors within this region and how each of them are using their power to either survive or further expand and gain even more control within this region.
Yeah, and I just want to tie like the South China Sea back to our example of the Suez Canal. So the Suez Canal is like a very, very tiny canal that just passes, that gives you like a very direct passage from Africa into Europe. So just imagine the Suez Canal not only being the passageway, but like you blow it up to the point where you have islands in there, you have oils, your like seafood economy depends on that entire region. That is exactly what the South China Sea is. And that is exactly why so many countries kind of want control over the South China Sea, because it will not only sustain your economy, but it also gives you access to this almost like hegemonic type of power within the region, right? And I think that's one of like the biggest points we're trying to drive home here is that this is not just about the economy, this is about the balance of the world, and we're going to be exploring that in many different aspects throughout our podcast.
As such, we would like to introduce our first country, which will be the main actor, the core country that everyone must go through that affects everything that goes on within this region, which is China.
China currently controls a very large amount within the South China Sea and is undoubtedly the strongest actor within the region. Their justification is that they have historically discovered and utilized the region before anyone else. To help us introduce China and their unique position within the South China Sea, we would like to introduce our distinguished guest speaker for this episode, which is Professor Mixing Pei.
Today, we have with us esteemed Professor Pei from Claremont McKenna College. He is an expert in U.S.-China relations and is here to speak more with us on China's unfolding strategy within the South China Sea. Professor Pei, can you briefly introduce yourself and describe your expertise?
Well, I have been teaching at Claremont McKenna for 11 years. Before I joined CMC, I was a senior researcher at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, which is one of the preeminent think tanks in foreign policy. And before that, I was a professor at Princeton. I was born in China. And I've been living in the US for more than 3 decades. My interest actually is mostly internal Chinese politics, but I pay a lot of attention to US-China relations.
So for our first question that we wanted to start off, we wanted to create a foundation for our listeners to understand and ask you, why should we care about China's actions within the South China Sea? Like, why is that relevant to us today?
Oh, there are many, many reasons to follow China's actions in the South China Sea very closely and with a great deal of concern. One is that the South China Sea, which is a huge area, it is the size of the US. We are talking, it's also a vital waterway. It's like a super highway in global commerce. So what happens there is of great economic and security importance to everybody. And then also, I think what we also want to uphold international law because China claims almost the entire South China Sea as its own. It's not really grounded. Chinese claims are not grounded in any international law. So we would like to see that the rule of international law prevails rather than the power of a certain country. And then lastly is that what happens there could lead to military conflict because the US has a strong interest in upholding international law, in protecting the legitimate interests of Chinese neighbors who are a lot weaker, who also have claims. And it's also a test of whether a very powerful China will abide by international law. We don't really want to see a China that acts like a bully, and a China that believes that might equals right. So for these reasons, we should pay attention to the South China Sea.
And so, on the topic of China's historical claim over the South China Sea, we understand that when they present themselves to the UN, it is just on the basis of that they discovered the majority of the islands in the South China Sea and that they've been utilizing this sea for a very, very long time. Besides that, what would you say are any of the other strategies that China is pushing in order to keep their dominance in the South China Sea?
Well, the Chinese claims, so-called historical claims, and the so-called infamous nine dashed line that China simply is that you really do not have any basis in international law because territorial claims are strongest when they are based on international law. And there was something called the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which actually lays out very clearly whether a country can claim islands, can claim maritime space as exclusive economic zones. So China can say that its ancestors are during the Song Dynasty, Tang Dynasty, there were Chinese fishermen taking shelter on that island. But that might be a historical fact. However, it does not provide any legal basis for China to come. So, because if sending somebody over to a place, leaving something behind, can be grounds for claiming territory, then the world will be a very messy place, right? Because I can claim my ancestors actually traveled to Kazakhstan, but does that make Kazakhstan part of China? Chinese claims have very legal basis. And based on what I have said, what I have read is that very few countries actually have strong legal claims. Vietnam does not. The Philippines certainly does not have those claims. China, because there are only three countries that are claimants. They may have some claims to the South China Sea, the part of China Sea that is within 200 miles of their continental territory. So now, since you don't have legal claims, then what do countries do? The countries then, there is another thing is that called finders keeper. That is those who possess, who have actual control, then will try to exert their claims. So until about 2014, when China began to build artificial islands, Chinese claims were based on those features that were barely above water. And China wanted to consolidate its claims and to militarize the claims, that is to build these islands and put military facilities on them, to change the facts on the sea, so to speak. Other countries have done so, but they've done reclamation projects on a very small scale. But China did it on a very large scale. So Chinese strategy today is to show to the rest of the claimants, I can do it. You can't, you don't have the resources. Or if you would still, if you do similar things on the little features you control, for example, Vietnam actually controls more features than China. Vietnam controls 30 features, around 30 features. China controls 5 to 7. So if Vietnam would want to do these things, then China would interfere with military force. So that is the law of the jungle. That's why the international community cannot accept. So this is what China's strategy is. That is, we create a fact on ground in the South China Sea and come and challenge us, because it's called gray zone coercive tactic. Let's be clear, there are no international laws that ban the building of artificial islands. It's not an act of war. So it's, in a way, technically speaking, it's very clever, but strategically speaking, it's very, very problematic, if not sort of foolish. Because by doing so, China actually directly challenges the US, because the US is the enforcer of international rules. And the US has a self-interest in making sure that China does not control the South China Sea. So now that's why we have this geopolitical conflict today between the US and China. And Chinese actions in the South China Sea are very, very important in bringing this about.
To follow up on that, do you see China's motivation as more defensively realist as they maybe try to maintain or secure their own resources? Or do you see them maybe having more of an offensively realist mindset as to challenge the United States as a global hegemon?
Yeah, I don't want to sort of get the sort of academic term, offensive realism, defensive realism. Let me just try explain the strategic thinking. I think I've already done so. That China believes that it had an opportunity. It had very clever gray zone tactics, and it wanted to show to the outside world, I've done it, what can you do? So what are the Chinese objectives? China sort of has at several levels. At the most tactical level, China now is in a stronger position militarily vis-a-vis the other claimants. These islands are of very little military value if China's opponent is the US. They can be blown to pieces by the US military within a few minutes if China gets into a conflict with the US. So it's not, but vis-a-vis the Philippines and Vietnam, they are of enormous military value. So China believes it has. So at a technical level, vis-a-vis other claimants, and secondarily, China can rely on these. This is, you might call this the salami tactic. That is, this is the first step, there can be second step. So if these militarized artificial islands are not challenged, China can take the second step. China can assert maritime control. China will send its ships, planes out to demand ships passing through these areas, aircraft transiting through to obey Chinese rules, like notifying China, even though that's international space. So that could be, because that's another way of asserting Chinese claims, because you say, well, we claim it's ours, and a lot of actors, commercial actors, actually acknowledge. Because if you're an airline, you really don't pay them much attention. All you want is to get your plane through the airspace safe and sound. Right? So that would be second, because it's all about solidifying your claims. And third, strategically, and I think this is where China has made a very big mistake, because it's really about testing American resolve. That is, the US has been saying, oh, we're not going to allow China to do this. We're going to be the guarantor of peace, security, and balance of power. Now China has taken this step. So what can the US do? So if the US is shown to be powerless in pushing back, and pushing back against China, specifically in terms of these islands, would require military action. And that's an act of war. So the US cannot do this. So the US commitment will be undermined. US will lose its credibility. So that's why the US has drawn a line in the water, a line in the sand. That's why it keeps sending, at great cost, aircraft carriers, conduct military exercises just to show to Chinese, well, you've laid down the gauntlet, we're going to take up the gauntlet, we're going to challenge you. So that, and of course, that has created enormous tensions in bilateral relations, because Chinese leaders believe that the US has no business in the South China Sea. They say, well, you're 8,000 miles away. Why are your ships here? But the US considers itself the protector of global security. The US has believes that it has every business, every reason to be involved in South China Sea.
We noticed that we were wondering if you see a difference in how Western media depicts China's actions in the South China Sea compared to how Eastern media would depict it, such as news outlets from Vietnam, Taiwan, and the Philippines.
Yeah, I have not been following the media outlets in Vietnam, in the Philippines. I think these media outlets typically reflect the perspectives of the people, the governments there. And so when I look at the South China Sea dispute, I tend to rely on perspectives, analysis, arguments of non-claimants, that is people who have no, who are neutral. That is, they look at this area and they would judge everybody's claims more or less objectively and independently. So, but I think the South China Sea dispute has already cast a very dark shadow over the region. For a long time, it was not a hot topic. There were tensions, but now it is an area in which a direct military conflict between the US and China is now becoming increasingly likely. And that is not something I think peace-loving people would like to see.
Thank you so much, Professor Pei, for your incredible thoughts on this issue. And I think it's clear that the entire South China Sea conflict really should be viewed, as Professor Pei explains, through this lens of China-US relations and how their tensions have boiled up into this massive conflict that not only affects countries within the region, but all of us on this global landscape as a whole.
It is clear after speaking with Professor Pei that this is not an Asian-centric subject, though the United States plays a very, very large role within the South China Sea since China sees the U.S. as the largest possible threat as of currently. So by them seeing us as this threat, it emboldens China to become a bit more aggressive with their strategies and their claim over the South China Sea.
Yeah, I think that it kind of shows that the region here really is not black or white. There's a lot of politics that show this is a fascinating arms race to secure as many resources as you can for your country. I think that it's really crucial to take an objective viewpoint within this issue. And the goal of this podcast is to really show how each country, each actor within this region has to use their own unique strategies to ensure that their country remains safe and secure at the end of this conflict. And with that, we would like to give special thanks to Professor Apple, Terrell, Emily, and everyone who has been instrumental to this podcast. Thanks again to the Keck Center for funding and making this podcast possible.
We hope you look forward to our next podcast, which will explore the geographic northern region of the South China Sea, and this will be including Taiwan and Hong Kong.